Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
Weird Tales from the Woods, Volume 4, Story Number 1. My deer camp backs up to the Pearl River here in Mississippi. Lots of standing water on the property, swamps, thick hardwoods, really beautiful piece of land that I love hunting. It's taught me the way of the woods as I've grown up. One winter night a few years ago, I went to get a four-wheeler left back in the rear of the property. It was about 10 p.m. and pitch black, and I decided to go back and get it while everybody else was partying at the camp house. I love these woods, but they get really eerie at night during the winter. I'm talking extremely quiet, pin drop silence. I was about 800 yards from the camp house, walking down a flooded four-wheeler trail with a good flashlight. The only sounds were my muck boots sloshing through the water. I was already kind of nervous about going out there alone in the dark. Maybe I'm a sissy, but all of a sudden the hair stood up on the back of my neck. I stopped walking and listened. To my left was a sort of open, grassy bog where I've jump shot woodies before, and on my right were thick, flooded hardwoods. I had stopped for about 2 seconds and was listening when, I kid you not, I heard a snarl come from across the bog. It sounded sort of like a very pissed off dog, but it seemed really loud in the complete stillness of the woods, and it sounded really close. It sounded like something you'd hear out of a cheesy werewolf movie. I yelled a four-letter word and ran like hell through the water, sloshing mud all over my clothes, ran all the way back to the camp house. All I could say when I got back, muddy and out of breath, was, "Man, I heard something out there." They just thought I was being a baby, but nobody volunteered to go back with me. I definitely heard it, though. It was completely silent out there. Not a cricket, bird, owl. Nothing was making any noise. Summertime woods in Mississippi are beautiful to listen to, but the winter silence can be a bit eerie. I'm guessing it was a stray dog, maybe a coyote, but I don't know why it would snarl at me like that. Whatever it was scared the you-know-what out of me. I've had plenty of dark early morning walks to stands out there since that happened, but I can't recall any other strange or eerie occurrence like that one. I've also seen the black cat of the south. I was on my old XR400, going wide open in a grassy agricultural field a mile or so behind my house. Came around a bend in the trail, which was just a bush tog grass trail in tall grass, and there it was, about 70 yards in front of me, laying on its side in the sun. I thought it was a black lab, but when it got up and slinked off into the bushes, it moved like a cat and had a tail. It was dark colored and probably about the same size as a black lab. I was about 20 yards from it when it disappeared into the tall grass. Story number 2. It was early fall. I was 18 and I had just graduated high school the previous May. I had spent the entire summer living in the back of a van, touring the Pacific Northwest with my little three-piece rock band, and generally failing to live up to both the expectations and the reputation of my big and very proper family. I didn't have a real job. I didn't have my own place. I didn't have plans to go on a 2-year Mormon mission like every male in my family had done for 5 generations before me, and I hadn't enrolled at Brigham Young University, the family school, either. Yeah, I was a loser, especially by my family standards, and I'm sure I've been the subject of many formal and informal family councils over the summer. I'm sure it was one of those councils that inspired my oldest brother-in-law. I'm the youngest of 6 kids, and there's a 20-plus year age difference between my oldest sister and myself, to call me out of the clear blue and offer me a job at his company located just outside of Denver. After a short discussion, and after coming to the realization that my band, as it was constituted, wasn't going to be signed anytime soon, why are good basses so hard to find? I accepted the job and found myself on a flight to Denver the next morning. I was a little suspicious to see my brother-in-law's jacked-up Suburban, filled to the roof with all kinds of gear, waiting for me at the curb. I was even more suspicious when he hopped on the I-25 and headed south, instead of hitting the I-70 and going west towards his house. We were nearly 20 miles south of Denver when he revealed that we were on our way to the San Luis Valley in southern Colorado to help him investigate some of the strange things that had recently been documented there. Apparently, my new job was to accompany him on a trip to investigate cattle mutilations and other Looney Tunes stuff in the bloody middle of nowhere, Colorado. A few hours later, we had made our way into the San Luis into a little town called Crestone, where we hooked up with a guy named Christopher O'Brien. Christopher had been doing research for a book that he would later publish called The Mysterious Valley. He shared stories and showed us photographs of literally dozens of cattle and other animal mutilations that he had documented since beginning research on his book. They spanned almost 50 years. He showed us pictures of very strange local Native American rock art depicting what looked like alien beings descending from round objects as well. He also told us about locations where people had been seeing strange lights and black helicopters with increasing regularity. I would be lying if I said that I wasn't incredibly creeped out as we left Christopher's house, knowing that we would be sleeping outdoors, miles from any town for the next few days. From there, we made our way to a place called the Baca Ranch, where we unloaded the mountain of gear that my brother-in-law had crammed into his Suburban. As we unpacked, I realized just how serious he was about catching whatever he thought we might see on film. In addition to buying a brand new generator, an expedition tent, sleeping bags, camp stoves, etc., he had purchased all kinds of video and night vision equipment. He had a Gen 3 Starlight monocular scope, a pair of high-powered Gen 3 binoculars, a thermal vision scope, and a brand new NV-compatible video camera. He even had a high-powered green laser with a range of several miles. All cutting-edge stuff in the early 1990s. We operated from that location for the better part of 4 days. We slept during the day and took turns keeping watch at night and saw nothing even remotely strange, unless you count watching a couple husky teenage girls making out in the backseat of a Geo Metro Strange. On the fourth night, we decided to be a little bit more proactive and drive around the valley hoping to see something as we drove. About midnight, we turned off the main highway and onto a flat straight road that led to Great Sand Dunes National Monument. A few miles down the road, we saw bright white light in the distance that we assumed was an oncoming car or motorcycle. We continued driving down the road a couple more miles, and it occurred to me that the light didn't appear to be getting any closer. I mentioned this to my brother-in-law, and he said that he had noticed the same thing. We drove another 2 or 3 miles, and again, it didn't seem to be getting any closer. I theorized that the light was a reflection of our own headlights, that our own high beams were bouncing off the still warm asphalt a few miles down the road in front of us like a mirage. This would explain the consistent distance of the light in front of us. To test my theory, my brother-in-law pulled off the deserted highway and turned off his headlights. No dice. The light was still there. Next, I theorized that it was a car heading in the same direction as we were and that we were just looking at a taillight with a broken or missing cover, which is why it appeared white instead of red. To test the theory, we decided to remain stationary and see if the light appeared to move away from us. After about 5 minutes, it became clear that it wasn't a vehicle moving in the opposite direction. The light was just as bright and still appeared to be only about a mile or so down the road in front of us. As we were sitting there, my brother-in-law busted out the night vision binoculars and green laser. Using the binoculars, he flashed the laser at the light. He did this 3 different times. On the third attempt, the light flashed us back. The light was so bright it temporarily blinded us. I still have a little black spot on the back of my retina. I see it every time I blink. And it started moving towards us at insane speeds. In the time it took us to turn around and get pointed in the opposite direction, the object had closed to within 100 yards or so. My brother-in-law quickly reached the maximum speed of the Suburban as we tried to shake whatever was following us. It continued to follow us for a couple of miles and then simply disappeared. We pulled over, caught our breath, freaked out a fair amount, and discussed what had just happened. We waited for about 10 minutes to see if this would show up again. As we sat there, I decided to pull out the night vision binocular, which coincidentally allowed one to see in the IR spectrum, and point in the direction we had just come. I can't remember my precise words when I saw the object sitting about 200 yards away, visible only in the IR spectrum, but I'm fairly certain there were a fairly high percentage of four-letter expletives in there. I gave the monocular to my brother-in-law, and he used the green laser to signal it again, and again it lit up and began moving closer. At that point, my brother-in-law just put the hammer down. We made for the town of Alamosa and didn't look back. It must have blinked out again at some point because it wasn't behind us when we pulled onto the main highway. The next day, we went back out there to see if any of the residents that lived off the sand dunes road had seen anything. Nobody had seen the light that we had seen. But without prompting, many of them told us about white orbs that regularly flew down the main sand dunes road toward the other side of the valley. One guy said, "It's like they're pretending to be trucks, hoping nobody sees them." We talked to an old ranch hand that described seeing white orbs out on the range. He shared stories about how he and his friends would chase them around on horseback at night. They would follow them around, and if he and his friends got too close, the orbs would just blink out. When he and his friends stopped looking for them and started heading in the other direction, the orbs would light back up and follow them back to the ranch house. I have no easy explanation for what these things were. I've heard them called will-o-wisps, among other things. When I got home, I started doing research about them and discovered that people all over the world see these things. As a trained scientist, I'm inclined to believe they have a terrestrial origin. I'm also inclined to believe that there is a rational explanation for the strange phenomena observed in places like the San Luis Valley Skinwalker Ranch and other hotbeds of paranormal activity. Next story. This is not my story, but something a friend saw. The backstory is what makes it particularly memorable to me. A few miles away, there's a small state park memorializing the Battle of Griswoldsville, Georgia. A friend lives over that way, and her husband had been out duck hunting all day with his father-in-law. Husband was driving home at 1 a.m. on the road next to the battlefield when he saw a Confederate soldier walking along the side of the road. He's a very quiet guy, definitely not a storyteller, and when he pushed, he just kept saying, "He looked like a Confederate soldier." It was a very quiet road. It dead ends into a dirt road with rural homes, only used by people that live in the surrounding areas, so it definitely wasn't a reenactor or a hoaxer. Anyway, the sighting is memorable and sad because of the history of that battle. After Sherman's troops destroyed Atlanta, they were marching to the sea. The Georgia militia, stationed in Macon, 30 miles from Griswoldville, had moved east, and the area was left unprotected. Griswoldville was the first real battle of resistance after Atlanta fell, and the war was all but lost. Local residents and homesteaders knew the Union Army was laying waste to everything in its path, and the families around Griswoldville put together a makeshift ragtag militia of local men, including teenagers and elder men, in an attempt to fight off the overwhelming force and save their homes and farms. That area doesn't have a reputation of being haunted, though apparently it is. There are so many battlefields in Georgia, some of which do have a reputation for ghostly gunfire and occasional troop sightings. It makes one wonder how many areas have ghostly sightings that go unreported. Next story. 1997, I was stationed in Germany. It was winter, and we were doing a warfighter exercise in Hohenfels. I was a tank commander, and our platoon was positioned on a terrain feature known as the Peanut. It was probably around 1 or 2 in the morning when my loader woke me and quietly said there was a squad of dismounts, in other words, infantry, coming down from the tree line and down into the valley that was our sector. I popped into the turret. I slept right beside my hatch on top of the turret and peered through the thermal sight. Sure enough, 9 dismounts moving through thigh-deep snow at about 2,000 meters. We could have smoked them easy at that range. I called my wing tank. Direct him to target. He sees them. I tell him, "I'll light them up at 1,500 meters. Then, gone, all of them. No heat signatures anywhere. We continued to scan. Sure, they were setting up an anti-armor ambush and were just in a low spot. Daybreak came and I sent my loader out, dismounted for a recon. We watched. He got out there and stumbled around the snow for a bit, then runs back. No prints, none. We can see about 6 kilometers up the valley from our position. No tracks anywhere. We didn't know what to make of that. Lots of us saw them. My loader, gunner, wing tank crew. We never talked about it again. Next story. One cloudy, moonless Minnesota night, a friend called around 10 p.m. As I did not want to wake the kids, I took my call outside. We lived in the country on 15 acres, and it was not uncommon for me to take late walks up and down the road when I couldn't sleep or because I liked the cool air. This evening, I only made it a few hundred yards down the road when the feeling of unease crept through me. I had this feeling I needed to get back to the safety of the yard and that the space between the driveway and myself was unsafe. I sped walk, keeping my eyes and ears alert. Once back in the yard, I continued my conversation, pacing the 100 yards from the house across the road to the mailbox and back. I couldn't shake the feeling of unease, but the wiser part of me told me to stop being afraid. All wild animals that were in our area were more afraid of people than anything else. The only reason I could imagine anyone getting hurt by one was either by purposely bothering them, coming up on one by surprise, or getting between a mama bear and cubs. My talking would alert anything nearby that I was there, and I wasn't looking for trouble. So what did I really have to worry about? I kept my walking against the feeling. I was mid-sentence and mid-stride as I turned back from the mailbox once again to head back to the house. I had quietly crept out of the tall grass and weeds from the ditch in front of our home. It was in the process of circling me as it hunted. It must have weighed a good 400 pounds. We both froze for a moment as we stared at each other. I stared in disbelief. Where had this come from? These are not native in the wild here. No doubt it was a very hungry escapee from a farm hunting, the only thing stupid enough to keep walking a predictable pattern past it. And hogs are not dumb animals. But hogs don't hunt for meat, especially human meat, do they? For just a second, I thought I was going to laugh. One of those stupid, frightened laughs, and tell my friend how I just found myself a new friend. And then it hunched slightly and began its stalking and circling again. My instincts took over, hair up on my neck, eyes straining against the dark, and I let out a blood-curdling scream as my flight instincts kicked in. I sprinted back to the house. I won, thank God. After apologizing to my friend about screaming over the phone, I ended my conversation and went online to do my research. Yes, pigs sometimes hunt. It was the last I saw of that hog. It was the last time I walked on the road at night. And it was the last time I walked on the road without carrying a gun during the day. Next story. I live way out in the country in a forest now with my 19-year-old daughter and my 8-year-old son. My mother and my wife lived with us, but we lost my mother in August 2014 to liver failure, and then we lost my wife in November 2014 due to complications of stroke, COPD, pneumonia, and sepsis. So it's just us now. One night, not too long ago, we were coming back from town. It was about 10:30 p.m., and out where we live, there are no street lights. I had just passed the cemetery and was coming up to the railroad crossing that is about a quarter mile from the turnoff to our house. I was slowing down to cross the tracks. At my 1 o'clock position, I saw a man just standing there at the railroad crossing. He looked like he might have been anywhere from his early to late 20s. He was wearing a gray hoodie with a jean jacket and dark pants. He had shoulder-length dark hair. I thought it was an odd place to be standing, but what do I care? As I crossed the tracks, my headlights hit him full on, and I was less than 10 feet from him. I could have sworn he did not have a face. No nose, no eyes, no mouth, no features at all. Just a blank, gray place where his face should be. I did a double take, but by the time I had passed him and it was dark, surely I must have imagined that. Surely. Then my daughter, who was in the passenger seat, and even closer to him when we passed, turned to me as white as a sheet. She asked, "Did you see that guy at the railroad track? He didn't have a face." I don't know what to make of it. I certainly wasn't going to go back to investigate with my children in the car. When I got to our gate to make out the railroad crossing, but I could not see if anyone was there. I made the sign of the cross, got out to open the gate, and kept a hand on my pistol. I haven't seen it again since that night, and I hope to never again. Next story. In an old mountainside gold mining district, Quartzville, Oregon, off the beaten track, on a blistering hot day, I stepped inside an old mine portal. just to get in some shade for a moment. As my eyes adjusted to the darkness, it appeared the tunnel walls were undulating slightly. I reached in my vest pocket, got out my little mini flashlight, and clicked it on. Must have been 10 million crickets coating the walls and ceiling. That was a very creepy feeling. But here's another time I had an even more creepier feeling. This was near Murray, Idaho, and I noticed a set of what appeared to be 1 or 2 day old footprints in the mud going into an old mine tunnel, and not another set coming out. I'd seen a schematic of those mine workings and knew the mine tunnel was around 1,500 feet long to a vein structure and around another 1,000 feet of working and stopes along the vein. Also, I knew the workings did not hole through to the surface, so there was no natural airflow ventilation. Radioed into the sheriff's office for an underground search crew, which arrived about 2 hours later. Geared up and went in with them. I'm experienced in underground mine rescue. At 900 feet, an oxygen tester showed the air turned oxygen deficient. We got our masks on, checked tanks, and proceeded. At about 1,450 feet, found a hunter's corpse, sitting but slumped over, rifle leaning against the tunnel wall, and dead flashlight next to him. He died of oxygen deficiency. Appears he sat down to rest, and that was that. Next story. I was raised in the U.S. Air Force. My dad made the Air Force his career, and he was a lifer. From 1963 to 1966, we lived at Elgin Air Force Base in Florida. My all-time favorite posting, because we lived on base in a relatively sense of safety. Me and my siblings were free-range children. Along with most of the kids of the neighborhood, we roamed the woods, creeks, and bays of the area. We built forts in the woods and fished in the many creeks. I never felt unsafe until one Saturday afternoon. Our house was on Wright Drive. All those houses have now been torn down, but the road imprint is still visible on Google Earth. Oak Hill Elementary was close by, and since I was on a sports team, I used the track. I was maybe 12 or 13 and was over by the school one afternoon by myself. Back then the school was new and set off by itself. I loved the outdoors and brought home all kinds of treasures and finds back then. I still do. I was walking around the track and suddenly I felt like I was being watched. I stopped and looked around. Nothing. Continued my laps, but that uneasy feeling didn't go away. There was no one else around. My house was about 1/2 mile away, and now I felt like I was being watched. I started to make my way over to the parking lot to cut through to my house. My shoe was untied, and I bent down to tie it. At that instant, I heard something or someone step on a twig and snap it in the woods right behind me. I took off like a flash. I didn't look back. I didn't hesitate. I just ran like the wind, all the way home. I didn't tell my parents because I knew I wouldn't be allowed to wander anymore. But after that, I didn't go far anywhere unless someone else was with me. And then I have another story. Again, this was on base. Again, with the free-range children. There was about 6 of us, boys and girls, all about 12 or so. This time we were down in the swamp on base. We were wandering around, wading in the shallow water, catching minnows, etc. Fun things kids do. We had been gone a couple of hours, and it was time to leave and check in with home. We followed the trail back to our starting point. There on a wooden support of 3 branches is the biggest water moccasin I had ever seen, ever. Its mouth was propped open with a shorter stick and had to be every bit of 6 feet long. It was dead, of course. We all screamed and ran for our lives. This time we did tell our parents. The dads went back to the swamp. The trail was behind a ball field, and sure enough, the snake was still there. Back then, Elgin was a major training area for Rangers and Green Berets. All the parents could figure out was maybe one of the Rangers or Green Berets had killed it and left it as a warning to us kids to stay away. All I know is we didn't go to that area of the swamp anymore. Next story. I've been fishing since I was 5 years old, and that has been a long time. I fish mostly at night in the summertime since it's so hot here in Alabama. A lot of my night fishing, I've been by myself, and a few times I've had others fishing with me. This story happened back in the 80s or 90s. I don't remember exactly when, but I do remember my dad and I were fishing a bass tournament, and we were on a secluded portion of the lake where there are a few houses. If I remember correctly, the tournament we were fishing in ended at midnight, so the time was around 11 p.m. There was no moon, and it was a clear night, so there wasn't a lot of light on the water. We were fishing on a bluff area that had sheer cliffs down to the water, and then we heard something large swimming in the water towards our boat. Whatever this was could swim about 30 seconds and then stop. I asked my dad if he could hear it, and he told me yes, and it was swimming in our direction. I kept trying to see what it was out there, but couldn't with no light on the water. It got closer and closer to my boat, and I decided I was going to see what was going on. I have two aircraft landing lights on the front of my boat to see logs with at night. I turned the front of the boat in the direction of the swimmer with the trolling motor, and then got behind the wheel and hit that light switch. There was a man that looked in his 70s swimming in the middle of the lake. He hollered, "Easy on the light!" And so I asked if he was all right or if he needed help. He told us he was just having a late night swim. I'm not sure where he went to or where he came from, but swimming on a lake at night with 50 or 60 boats running around is not that wise. My dad and I both laughed about it afterwards, but it wasn't funny before we knew what was swimming up to our boat. Next story. This happened in Boulder, Utah. It was spring roundup. Grandpa and Dad and a couple of uncles were gathering the last of the cattle on the winter range. Us kids at school the next day, so we were dropped off at Grandpa's. We could catch the school bus at the neighbor's down the road house. I was only 13 or so. My two cousins were close to my age, and my brother, 4 years my junior. We were happy because we had no adult supervision until we got on the bus the next morning. We were going to sleep in a camp trailer in the driveway. Grandpa had only taken two of his five cow dogs, so we were trying to get the others to sleep with us. These are tough ranch dogs, two Catahoulas and a blue heeler. We couldn't get them to settle down, so we finally put them outside so we could get some sleep. We were almost asleep when something hit the trailer hard, followed by furious barking and snarling from the dogs. For the next hour, something fought with the dogs and beat the snot out of the trailer. The sounds were like a pig, fox, and horse all mixed up. I've not heard anything like it since. We were terrified. All guns were in the houses. All we had were a few dull steak knives. Long story short, it finally left around midnight. The next morning, the first thing we did was look for tracks. But it rained after we fell asleep, so no joy. The adults thought we were just making it up to scare ourselves, but it wasn't like that at all. Later on, my dad's girlfriend told me something very similar happened to her under pretty much the same circumstances, but she never told anyone. The ground was frozen, so no tracks for her either. No tracks, no injuries to the dogs, no proof. I thought about it a lot, and it's a complete mystery to me still. Next story. Let me tell you guys what really gives me the creeps. This happened back in 2016-2015. I was home from college during the summer, and the gardenia bushes in my parents' backyard were in full bloom. They're my favorite flower in the world, so I'm constantly going out and cutting some off the tree to get a fresh bouquet after one dies. I was cutting and enjoying the smell and looking for the best ones, but the whole time I'm not quite at ease, which is weird because it's just my backyard after all. We have semi-wooded backyard, but our neighborhood is still very suburban, and the lots aren't really huge. My back was to the thickest part of the woods, the brush, and while I cut the flowers the whole time, I kept hearing lots of rustling and commotion of something snapping branches and moving palm fronds. I thought maybe a squirrel or a small critter was making the noise, and I just tried to tune it out. I couldn't ignore this uneasy feeling, and I just gave up on finding the perfect flower. I cut some crappy ones and headed back inside. Maybe no less than 15 minutes later, I head back outside again to tan by the pool. I'm out there for a while, and for the most part, I was distracted being on the phone, and I kept hearing the same exact noises, pretty loud every once in a while, of something moving in the thick brush. After finally putting my phone down, trying to close my eyes to relax, I couldn't deny the fact that there was something nearby. I started thinking back to a few days prior where I'd seen two deer in the backyard, so I got excited, stood up, thinking that it might be them that was causing all the rustling in the backyard. No deer that I can see, In fact, when I stood up, this sets up a lot more noise, a lot of loud noise. At this point, I'm like, oh, whatever's there is big. That has to be a black bear. Black bears are super common in the neighborhood. I was convinced the black bear was about to emerge from the thick brush and trees any second, so I went quickly inside, and as I'm walking, I noticed the noise stops. My hand was on the doorknob to get inside my house at this point, and I was starting to feel safe, and I'm not hearing any more noise, so I finally turned to see if the bear has emerged into the clearing in my yard. Nope. At that exact moment, I looked over my shoulder, and I see a creepy older man I've never seen in my life, who pops his head up out of the middle of all this thick, prickly, and uninviting vegetation, and we make direct eye contact with each other. I'm not kidding when I say this moment has provoked a series of nightmares. His expression was completely deadpan. He didn't blink or show any emotion or flinch at all in the fact that I'd caught him watching me from my backyard. After a few seconds of deer in the headlights moment for me, I bolted. I was home alone, so I got in my car and took off in my bikini and all. When my dad and my brother got home, they combed over the backyard with their guns, but obviously he didn't stick around. Worst of all, I'm almost positive I had my back to him. I was just a few feet away from where he was hiding when I was out cutting my flowers. That would explain the uneasiness. My parents coincidentally moved into a new house at the end of that month, and I couldn't be happier because every once in a while, I just couldn't shake that I'm being watched feeling. Next story. A few years ago, I was returning to the office from a job site. I was soaked in sweat, so I decided to stop and change clothes and eat my lunch. I pulled into a beach area and found a nice shaded mangrove alcove. With no one around, I stripped down all the way, including my underwear, and was about to redress. Then, all of a sudden, this guy popped out of the mangroves and walked up to my car. I covered myself up as best I could with my clean clothes. He pulled on my passenger door handle. My hand went to my gun, and I was ready for battle. Upon discovering the door was locked, he strutted to the front of the car and did a rather disturbing attempt at a seductive dance. He was very thin and scrappy and appeared very unhealthy. I realized that he was the guy sitting in a black car at the entrance to the park when I pulled in. After a minute of excruciatingly bad seduction dance, he strolled up to my driver's side door. I lowered the window a crack and gave a very assertive, "What do you want, man?" He was very interested in my awkward state of undress. His reply was a very mellow, "I'm just looking for someone to do." My immediate response was, "That's not going to happen, man. Get away from this car." At this point, he was practically drooling down my window. If I had been dressed, I probably would have gotten out and roughed him up, but it reminded me too much of the scene in Something About Mary, where he goes to pee at the rest stop. It took a few angry expletives to finally get him to back off. I threw my clothes on and got out of there. Fast forward a few months. It was 4 a.m. on a Saturday. I was on my way to a sailing regatta. Being ahead of schedule, I stopped to put on my racing team shirt and watch the sunrise. It was another beachy park area with mangrove trees. Sure enough, a black van that I had passed pulled up behind and nearly blocked me in. The same scrappy, skinny AIDS dude got out and started to approach. This time I started the car immediately and threw it in reverse and nearly ran him over. Apparently, mangrove areas are big gay hookup spots. Lesson learned. The joke from my friends became stay out of the mangroves anytime I would go anywhere. Next story. This happened to me in September, back in, 2016, on a small salmon creek in Arkansas. This particular creek runs through the heart of the city, but its headwaters come from a national forest. The section of water I was fishing in is located near trailhead for mountain bikers and the like, but once you step off the trail, it's remote. I love this little creek, and I would jump in and wade downstream while casting beads for trout and dollies. This particular day was cold and rainy, and I had caught upwards of 20 fish while wading a couple of miles of water. Everything was great, like perfect. Until I rounded a bend and came upon a large clearing situated around an oxbow and a huge beaver dam. As soon as I rounded that corner, the same spidey sense feeling everyone else describes began to set in. I yelled, "Hey, bear!" It was his custom whenever things were a little too quiet as I scanned the area for movement, but there was none. The area I was in was National Geographic Special Level Beautiful, and the varied waters in its clearing made me drool, so I began fishing, trying to overcome the feeling of dread and flat-out terror which was overcoming me. After a couple of casts, I realized I was busier looking over my shoulder than watching my line, so I packed up and headed downstream. The sensation of fear lessened, but never left. So when I came across a footbridge a half mile or so later, I jumped on it to take the trail and return to my car. I had been on that trail for a while, still unable to shake the feeling of dread, when I heard a massive crashing through the trees and see a moose shoot out of the woods and across the trail about 20 yards in front of me. The thing was howling, and it was clear something was chasing it. Everything clicked, or so I thought, and I figured there's a bear in the area, and that's why I was feeling the fear. Well, that explanation actually made me feel a little better, as bear are generally easy to deal with in this particular season. I had many chances to gain experience in that realm. So I slowed my pace just a bit, and sure enough, I hear trees crashing from whatever's chasing the moose. I began my preparations, making myself seem as big as possible, holding my arms with my fly rod above my head, and yelling, "Hey, bear," as loud as I could so it didn't startle when it hit the trail. There I am, puffed up and loud, and all of a sudden, the largest bull moose I have ever seen in 30 years of living in Arkansas jumped on the trail, took one look at me, and sprinted directly at me. I was doing everything wrong for an encounter with a bull moose in September. This thing either wanted to fight or screw. Either way, I dove off the trail and into the trees as it ran after me, taking out little spruces as it went. This sucker was determined, and we danced in the trees for a good 10 minutes. Eventually, I found a stand of trees, grouped close enough together that it would stand between us. It was there that we went round and round for minutes. I literally could have reached out and touched its rack as we spun round that stand of trees. Eventually, it made a direct attack, attempting to bull through the trees, and got tangled up long enough for me to sprint away. I was on a dead sprint when I heard it hit the trail, its hooves stomping as it began running. He only went about 10 yards before stopping, thank God, because I was out of gas. I've always wondered if that fear was a premonition of things to come, or if there was a predator or something else causing that emotion, and the moose just happened to come along. I learned several important lessons on that trip about being armed and buying proper waders. Cheap ones are impossible to run in. Then, about a month after I had that experience with the moose, I headed south to try and take some very late season monster bows from the Kenai. The main river hadn't been real productive, so we stopped at a smaller tributary on our way back home. There was a completely empty campground, and no one was near the river, so we had our pick of spots. I found a deep pool on a corner to do some chuck and duck, fly fishing in, and had just bushwhacked my way into a decent position when I heard the deepest chest rattling growl I have ever heard in my life. Instantly, that same terror I experienced a couple of weeks before struck. I turned around to see what it was and couldn't see a thing. As I stood there scanning the woods, I heard another shorter growl, one that reminded me more of a frustrated human than anything else. Still, I saw nothing. I was well armed, but instincts kicked in and I ran. I ran like a drunk college girl in Friday the 13th. I sprinted, yelling to my buddy who was fishing a different stretch of river as I ran up on him, "Let's go now!" I was a 300-pound power lifter at the time, so I imagine it was quite the sight. When we got to the truck, we sat and watched, scanning the area for at least 30 minutes, hoping to see whatever it was that turned me into a little girl come out, but never did see a thing. I've never told anyone this before, but I know it wasn't a bear. I don't know what it was, as I never saw a thing, but that growl did not come from a bear. I do confess my nerves were shot at that point after the moose incident, and I've had several run-ins with bears over that season, but that fear in both encounters was almost unnatural. I felt something I've never felt before or since, and believe me, I've been in some shit.